In 2017, a bunch of nerds were tasked by a podcasting network to come up with a monthly show. These men promptly came up with the idea for a comic book show where they could educate the masses. Today, they use this show as a platform for helping their fellow nerds in any way they can. If you have a nerdy question, if Google hasn't helped you, and if you have a Facebook account, maybe you can ask the Nerds for Hire.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Nerds for Hire. This week, Dalton couldn't join us, so it's just me and Asa.
Yes.
But we have some very special guests. I'm going to introduce Pat Kennedy.
Hello there.
Ben Martin.
Hi.
And we've had him on the show before, Brian Rhodes.
Hello.
These guys have or are making a video game. It's currently in a playable state, and Asa and I both got the chance to try it. So they're in the, oh, what do you call the... advertising stage? No, that's not the right word. Marketing?
Yeah, we're kind of just trying to hype up the game a little bit, try and get people to get behind it, just to give us some feedback and just in general motivate us a little bit.
Perfect. And yeah, they have a Facebook and everything set up for it, and they're finally getting everything on the road, and I'm super excited about it. It was a super fun game. I've known Pat and Ben for a really, really long time now. And I was around for the inception of this game.
Yeah, you are.
What's the name of the game? Let's go ahead and start with that.
I was going to get there. Staff and Shadow?
That is correct.
All right.
You've done your homework.
I'm a professional. All right, yeah. Staff and Shadow is the game they're working on. And, Asa and I both got a chance to play it. Describe your game for the listeners, Pat.
It's the easiest way to describe it is just an RPG. It's a little more linear, very creepy tone to it.
Can confirm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the easiest way to describe it.
All right. Tell us about your protagonist.
As Lucas, he's a little kid, about 10 years old or so. And it's, you don't really get a lot of backstory to anything. It just kind of drops you into playing. And so you start out. You wake up in the middle of the night, your family is gone, nobody in town's around, and from there you're trying to look for your family, and things go kind of wrong from there.
All right. Yeah. And boy, do they. I do really like the puzzle mechanics. How about this? Go ahead and each of you tell me your role in the game right now.
All right, I'll start. This is Ben again. I am the programmer for the video game. I do all the programming and make all of Pat's dreams into a reality.
Pat, do it.
Yeah, Pat here. I'm the designer on the game, the idea guy. I also try to do sound effects. That's kind of difficult, but we do our best there. And yeah, I get to yell at Ben a whole lot.
Who doesn't like yelling at Ben? All right, Brian, what you got?
I am the artist for the game. I would say lead artist, but I'm the only artist, so I guess I'll just say I'm the artist. I start with concept art, and then I use mostly Adobe Illustrator for the game art, and I just, you know, draw it and give Pat and Ben sprite sheets, and they put it in, and it hopefully looks pretty.
It does look pretty.
It does look really good.
Yeah, I do really like
Thank you.
Because we have, if those of you that had listened to Nerd Up, we've had Brian on before to talk about his comic book. He's a very talented artist and writer, and I hope most of you guys have checked out that comic book by now. Brian, you want to go ahead and plug that while we're at it?
Yeah, the comic is Six Legs, No Heart. It's about ordinary people with extraordinary bug problems, and you can find it on Comixology. That's the easiest way to find it.
There you go. And I purchased it digitally and physically.
Oh, thank you.
No problem. All right. So, bye, guys. That was Shannon and Billy leaving. all right. I'm trying to think of where to go from here.
Well, so where did, because you said you were around, because I've known you guys for a much shorter amount of time compared to Jesse. So where did this idea come from? Like, is it, because you've been working on it for, would you say 6 years?
Yeah. And a half.
Six and a half years. So where did this idea originally come from? And then what were, you know, the initial steps that you took to where you decided, okay, you know, I have this idea for a thing, but let's actually make it real.
Yeah, it's a really good question. So about 6 years ago, you know, I've always wanted to make a game even since I was a kid. I think everybody at this table probably has.
Oh yeah.
But so me and Jesse actually used to work at GameStop together. And after I quit there, Jesse was telling me, hey, my friend Ben, he's he's a programmer, he wants to make a game too, like, you should meet up with him. So I did. I'd known of Ben because he would come into the store sometimes, but I didn't really know him, you know. So we had a meeting. I think it was at my friend Justin's apartment at the time, and we just kind of clicked. I kind of went over what I thought, you know, hey, this is should be an easy idea. Of course, that grew out of proportion, but you know, and pretty much everything, like, hey, is this doable? Ben says, yeah, it should be doable. So we kind of just went from there. Maybe he can give a little different perspective on
it. It actually worked out pretty well at that time, because in my free time around that period, I was actually just spending time just working on my own little engine for essentially a game that was what we ended up making. And so I just off and on, and then Jesse, we're sitting in Burritoville one day, and says, hey, do you want to make a video game with Pat? And I said, yeah, sure.
I made the magic happen, guys. It's all me.
You're responsible for this.
Executive producer.
You know, Ben and I actually graduated college together. We were both computer science majors. That's where I first met Ben, in CS2, I think was the first class CS2. We had together. Yeah, then we just kind of took every class following together. And yeah, at the same time, I was working with Pat at GameStop. Ben was one of my regular customers as well, because he liked buying video games, and boy, do I like getting pre-orders at the time. And seeing Ben, but yeah, no, yeah, I'm really glad that all worked out. And then, of course, Brian the artist comes along.
How did that happen?
So
I was gonna ask you may have a more distinct memory of this than I do.
So originally we had tapped my friend Justin to kind of do the artwork, but he kind of faded out of that after just doing a couple like concept things. And I've known Brian and his wife Amanda for a while, and we'd always you know, since the inception been like, okay, Amanda could definitely do the music for this. Because Brian was like super busy. He was working on his Mike and the Ninja comic. He had this other comic. He's doing freelance stuff. I didn't really want to ask him to do this, but he came downstairs one day while we were having a meeting, like me, Ben, Amanda, and Justin at the time. And he just came downstairs, and I said, "Hey, Brian, do you want to do some artwork on a video game?" And he just shrugs his shoulders and he goes, "Sure." And that's kind of how that started.
Yeah. So is Amanda doing the music for it too?
She is. Okay. She's had a lot. What am I trying to say here? She hasn't had a super amount of time to work on it. We have a lot of like kind of prototype music right now. Mm-hmm. And when you guys played the game, a couple of those tracks, they still need a little bit of fine tuning. But you probably noticed there wasn't like any music in the second area. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's something we're still working on. But yeah, she's definitely doing the music.
That's cool.
I can kind of speak on her behalf as far as like not having more music done for the game yet. I think she's like kind of waiting for us to just finish more of it so that she can better understand the pacing and the atmosphere of the game. And oh, so yeah. Then at that point, she'll be able to kind of go in and fill in the blanks as far as the music goes.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely makes sense to have a score like once you have seen more of the title.
Right.
Yeah.
So how much of your designs, Brian, for the art, has that, like, do you guys meet like with Pat and Ben and just kind of like, this is, you know, the style that we're going for? Did they just kind of be like, hey, do you want to make some art and we'll use it? Or
yeah, I guess I basically how it got started was Pat just kind of gave me an idea of, you know, kind of the feel of the game and sort of the atmosphere and kind of what we were going for. And so from there I drew up a ton of concept art, just like filled up, well, maybe like a quarter of a sketchbook with concept work, and we, you know, worked out some character designs, and I had a sheet of like 12 of them, and you know, we picked out what we liked the best. And then for some of the other key items in the game too, like the staff and the backpack, you know, did some various things there, and we just kind of, you know, decided what we liked best. And then from there I started just kind of building stuff in my art programs, Illustrator and Photoshop and what have you.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Brian's work, and I think he's a real creative guy, so I don't try to narrow things down too much. Like, I like to let him kind of figure things out, and if I don't like something, you know, I'll tell him, but usually it turns out really great, so.
And with the four-man operation, I understand that that's just kind of going to happen. Yeah. All right. I guess next one for Ben, because I know a lot of people out there think, whenever they think, you know, I want to get into programming, I want to program video games. About how much work would you say you put into this, programming-wise?
Got a couple hours every week for the past 6 years now, more earlier on. So, I mean, a lot. It's a lot of work. Like, if you look at a video game and think, that boy, that's a lot of work, you are not wrong, and it's more than that.
It's always more than you think.
It is always more than you think.
Especially considering that, because, like, you all have full-time jobs, too. Yeah. So it's not you know, you're. This is just a passion project. It's not like you have funding from a studio or, you know, you can focus all of your time on it. This is what you can work on as you get that just free little bit.
Yeah, this is literally going to be one of those four guys in a basement thing. Yeah. Like, that's how the story is going to start.
Yeah.
It's literally what it is right now.
I'm really hoping to see it on every gaming website when we're done. Like, four guys in a basement made this great game. Go check it out.
I mean, that's how I'm going to be pimping it. Yeah. Like,
it all starts right here. You were here at the beginning, dear listener.
That's right. You guys are special, and you can find them on Facebook, but we don't have a playable demo available anywhere, right?
Correct. Yeah, the only executable stuff we have is just on our local machines. So, but we are putting videos up, we're putting screenshots up. You can expect more of that as more of the development kind of comes along. Once we get like some new art in, we can kind of show that off a little bit.
Okay. Do you have anything? Because I played the first two areas, right?
Yeah, you played. You got stuck on the second area. You died, but
yeah,
you
got into it. The last part of the second area, right? Or was it?
You still had quite a bit to go in the second area.
Oh, really?
Asa.
Yeah, because I made it to
knock them all.
I made it to the third area.
Oh, yeah, nice. when it was described to me by Asa, I assumed that I made it to the last boss of the second area. But okay, Pat's shaking his head now. Yeah, no, because that boss beat me pretty bad.
Technically, they did say there were some rebalancing issues, or like there was some rebalancing that was done after you played. Between the time that you played and I played, but I still just think that this is just, you know, no, Asa wins. Mark in my favor.
I'm fine with it. You can have the win, buddy. It's all yours. And yeah, no, it was really, really fun. They have some pretty crazy puzzle mechanics with it that I really, really enjoy. And I always like wind puzzle mechanics. It's always fun. So, yeah, and like I said, everything looks really, really cool. So, great job there, Brian. Like, it's super fun. Like, I'm really excited for you, the listener, to get a chance to play this game. What percentage of the game would you say you guys have complete now?
Me? somewhere between, I don't know, 20 and 50%.
So, how many stages do you have planned?
There's going to be probably the main six areas in the game, and we've got two of them like 90% of the way done. There's a lot of backbone stuff that is mostly done for the game. A lot of it's going to be coming down to Brian finishing up a lot of artwork, and then also me and Ben just doing a whole lot of polish on a lot of things.
Like, a lot of what we've done so far is, you know, getting stuff in the game so that, you know, you can move objects, you can interact with them. And so that's sort of, you know, interaction will carry through out the rest of the entire game. So that's done in a sense for six areas, but then area specific mechanics, you know, will have to be done once we get there. But a lot of it will keep going forward.
Gotcha. Okay. And it is also, in addition to being, you know, puzzle RPG style, it does have a combat system. You guys want to go ahead and tell the people how that works?
Sure. So it's at first glance, it is like pretty similar, pretty familiar to a lot of like normal RPGs you'd play. But once you kind of delve into it a little bit deeper, it's, I think, a lot more fun, a lot more engaging than most like plain RPGs are. Cause that was always my problem with them growing up, was like, you would just press the X button over and over again, just pound on enemies. So in this game, you kind of have to find their weaknesses out pretty quickly and exploit that. And, you have just one character as opposed to having a party. But the twist on that is like, you have three different timers for, you have Lucas itself, you have this magical staff, and you have this magical backpack, and they all have their own separate timers to them, that let you individually cast spells, individually do like different character actions, like power up those spells or guard like big incoming attacks. And then the other one can kind of use items. And when you kind of get through the game further, they become a little bit less independent, so your spells can actually heal you rather than just throw attacks out, that kind of thing. But yeah, it's you wouldn't expect it to be as like dynamic and as quickly paced as it is for an RPG, but when you play it, like, you're actually really paying attention to your timers and paying attention to how much damage you're having to do to the enemies, or else you're gonna die.
Can confirm.
Yeah, I really, really like the combat system, because I'm not a huge RPG player, like traditional, like turn-based RPG. So as I was going through the menus, like, okay, I can kind of see how it is, but I think you do a really good job of making sure that, because usually even when you have, like, you know, in a regular RPG, you're kind of like, okay, so you have your attack, your magic, and then your items that you have to, but you always usually, like you said, you're just mashing X on attack to get through the fight. Like, even, because this game doesn't necessarily have, like, mobs, like, there's not smaller enemies. Every fight is a pretty major fight.
Correct.
So you can't, you're not just sitting there mashing X waiting for the animations to end. You actually do have to manage all three of these timers really, really well. So I that, because that is my big thing with, like, turn-based RPGs, is I can get bored pretty quick if I am just sitting there mashing X over and over. But it does a really good job of keeping the player engaged. It also sounds way more complicated than it is. Like,
it's super simple, but it has some complexities to it that are kind of fun. It's super, once you get going with it, and I like how you guys build into it. It's not like, here's everything all at once. The more magic stuff you get, the more you have to do and the more upkeep you have with a lot of the stuff, and I really, really liked that. And I know, like, one thing in particular, if you do just keep mashing X on magic spells, you run out of magic points, I think is what you call it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You have a limited number of magic points per encounter that you can rebuild with certain other abilities, but if you just keep mashing X, you're going to run out and you're just going to kind of be sitting there. And yeah, no, I really liked that part of it. And yeah, like I said, simple in its complexity. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that I really liked whenever Pat first was walking me through it is, you know, typically your old school Final Fantasy, it's attack, 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 attack. All right, now I need to use an item. I'll use an item. Attack, 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 attack. I'll use an item. Whereas in this, you're really incentivized every single time a timer is filled to make use of that timer. So whenever your actions fill up, you can, you know, charge, make your attack stronger, focus to clear status effects, or use an item because, holy cow, you're getting dealt a ton of damage by these enemies. And yeah, it's just, it's a lot better than other battle systems.
You have to make conscientious decisions as you fight.
And it seemed like most of the fights had kind of a unique piece of the fight. No two battles really felt exactly the same, mostly because of the, you know, figuring out weaknesses and everything else, interacting with, there's one part where there's a distinct interaction with the environment. I think it was something with, it's been a few weeks now since I've played it. It was the part with the electricity. Am I thinking of the right thing?
Probably like so. out of combat.
No, it was an in combat thing where, like, if you hit them with the electricity while they weren't flashing, it's not an environment interaction. Never mind. It was specifically because I remember there was it was just something that came up where I didn't realize what exactly they were doing, and the effect that I was supposed to be getting out of it, I wasn't getting because I used the right attack at the wrong time, basically. So go ahead and ignore that, guys.
I think you're talking about when enemies were kind of reflecting stuff back at you.
Yes.
And that's kind of one of the things we wanted to do, is make each battle pretty unique. That's one of the few things that has not changed since, like, the inception of the game, was the combat system is pretty much the way I wanted to build it, and the focus on not fighting mobs and just fighting basically boss battles the whole time and never having a level grind, that's stayed unchanged this entire time. So I'm really happy about that. Yeah.
You shouldn't be fighting rats that bite you.
And you'll never have to battle in this.
Yeah. Nope, can confirm, did not do that in what little I played anyway. All right, so the magic system, go ahead. It's also kind of unique, if one of you want to describe that to the listener.
Are you talking about like in battle, out of battle?
Both.
Okay, so out of battle, you kind of get spells to cast while you're kind of adventuring through the different levels. If you've ever played Golden Sun, it's probably the closest thing to compare is that, where you can kind of manipulate some of the stuff in the environment. You can, you know, push rocks with your wind spell, or, you know, move stuff out of the way with the wind. You can zap generators with the lightning spell to kind of blow up these different gates that are blocking you. Later in the game, they haven't gotten a chance to play it yet because we're only to that second stage. But later on, you get an ice power, you get a fire power as well, and you get an earthquake power that's pretty cool too. So you get like one spell of each type to cast on the environment like that. So it makes exploring the towns and in the in-between areas a lot of fun. And it also lets us kind of build dungeons to where it's not real puzzle solving. It's more just like figuring out how to get past these different obstacles. Because it's if you take like a Zelda game and you look at the dungeons, it's very much like figuring out where to go. And with this game, I wanted to make it a lot more just like a linear, like start to finish type of thing. So it's a lot less like figuring out where to go, and it's more just figuring out like how do I get to the next room. And as far as in battle spells, there's usually three or four per type, and they all have kind of different properties to them. One of the things I think is really cool about it is when you use an action that Lucas can do to charge up those abilities, they gain kind of new properties to them. So a spell that might only hit like one target, if you power it up, it can now hit like an entire line of targets. Some of them will give you like health back when you charge it up, or some of them will deal damage that goes through armor. Just putting little twists to kind of incentivize you to charge up your abilities to get past some of the trickier bosses.
I think the charge up feature was the one that I used more than any other while I was going through that. The magic system is super neat. Ben, is the earthquake feature, is that the one you showed me a while ago that you were super proud of, the particle effect?
No, I don't think so.
Because you showed me a long time ago now a particle effect that you created that hits in a line in front of you, and then it just kind of comes up in sequential pieces in front of you. Or do you not use that anymore at all?
I don't remember what that was. Yeah, no, I do remember what you were talking about, though. That was pretty cool.
I remember coming over, and Ben was just super excited to show me like this particle effect he made.
Wasn't that one of the thunder effects or one of the lightning effects? Because I thought I remember you talking about it.
No, because this one I distinctly remember like rocks coming up. Squares in front of you, rocks would pop up as it went.
Oh, yeah, okay. I think that was an old version of one of our earth spells, yeah. But okay. It does look really cool. I'm hoping we can use something like that in the final game.
It's one of those things, like, occasionally I'll see pure joy on Ben's face. Yeah. And that was one of those situations.
Yeah. And I actually had a moment just a few seconds ago when Pat was talking where I just stopped paying attention because I'm like, wow, that would be really cool to put in the game if we did this when you cast the Earth spell. even now, just to sort of sit there and think about what could be. It's fun.
Ben, just the constant programmer.
Yeah, I'm guilty.
We won't guilty stop charged.
Good for this project for sure. All right, Asa, you look like you wanted to say something.
There was something, and now it's gone. The only thing that, because I'm really good at that. With the gameplay mechanics, because you said you kind of had an engine in place, Ben, that you'd been toying with
kind of
before the project officially started.
Yeah.
So like with the combat engine and the use of the magic, was that more kind of your idea for how you wanted combat to work for the game, or was it just, you know, something you thought could, because it seems like it's, because playing it felt like that would seem kind of like a nightmare to try to be able to balance and keep as engaging as it is, but it's from what we've played, it's done really well. So was that more, did that come from kind of like, that's the kind of style of gameplay you wanted, or did you find like, oh, well, with this kind of engine, it works like that?
I definitely think that was just came from Pat's vision of this would actually play well, and it ends up playing really well. And when I say I had an engine, like, it was very bare bones. It was just, tile-based and would let you walk around, and it's been drastically improved since then, and the combat was entirely Pat's idea in terms of, so that wasn't in the game as I had it when we started.
where did you get the idea for using? Because one of the things that I really liked, and it also a little bit bugged me because I didn't get them all, of just like the hidden abilities within the spells. So like, you know, with like certain spells, like if you use it while you're charged, it does an extra, like it will do something else. How did you kind of piece those together?
I'm actually not sure anymore. It was a long time ago. I think that was just an original idea I had. It didn't really come from any other game or anything. There was no real inspiration, but just being able to spice up combat in a different way is just kind of where that came from. Because I wanted to have, you know, those three separate timers that you use for each you know, character that's with you, and you know. You got to have them do something, right? So, yeah, just like boosting the spell's effects and things like that. It just seemed like a natural type of thing to try out.
Mm. And it worked well. It was really cool.
Thank you.
Right. So, let's see. The outside... So, we basically seen from where we're at, we explored a church, if I remember right. That was the second area. And then...
Church was the first area.
Or was the first area.
It was
the first
like area. A 1.5 area. Yeah.
1.5 area, okay. So what kind of environments do you have planned for the next few parts?
Let's see.
You want me to answer?
Yeah, you probably should.
Brian hasn't drawn them yet, so he doesn't know.
Right. I have vague ideas of what's coming, but I just haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah, so you know, pretty much each dungeon is kind of... you go to a kind of a town next, and that'll lead you to another dungeon. That's kind of the main progression of the game. So the first area, you have that town and the like, big mansion to go through. The second town is more of like a factory power plant type of area. After that, there's like a big kind of like skyscraper hotel type of thing that you go through.
Yeah, it's on like the edge of a cliff, which I think is going to make for some really cool level design. It's going to look really cool. It looks really great in my head.
If you can get it from your head to Brian's hands.
Yeah, I'll try to live up to your vision.
So yeah, it's kind of a mountainy area like Ben described there. After that, we have kind of a water area, a bunch of islands, and then there's a big castle area, and then you'll just have to play the game to find out what the last area is.
Oh, man.
It's going to be great.
So is the water level going to be the level everyone hates, or are you going to stick with that trope?
No, your swimming mechanics are going to be great. I just know it.
There's no swimming. You don't have to switch to some iron boots every 5 seconds by going into a menu. No, there's... I think it's actually going to be a really fun area because that's where you get the ice powers and you'll be able to kind of skate across the water with that.
Oh.
Yeah, I was going to say it's going to be like Delfino Plaza and it's going to be great, but I'm not sure if anyone else liked Mario Sunshine.
Lots of people liked Mario Sunshine. Right. Dozens. Dozens of people liked Mario Sunshine.
For all of you, it's like that. For everyone else, it's not like that.
It's like that, but good.
Exactly.
I mean, it's got to be some kind of popular because it's gotten really expensive on the GameCube. So.
Really?
Yeah, like it's up to $40-something or $50. Like,
so not back to what I paid for.
Yeah, almost back to retail, which for a GameCube game is kind of rare.
It's true.
There's only like maybe half a dozen games that are significantly above retail anymore. I work in video games too long. All right, so I'm excited about it. The ice power sound cool. So we got ice, earth, wind, holy. What other kind of types of magic do we have here?
Fire.
Fire, yep.
And electricity. Yeah.
Yep.
I don't think you... Did you mention that?
I don't think I did.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think you got them all. Should be six.
Only six. That's... Because that's... Because... And one of the things that I liked about... Like, especially getting into the second area, because you mentioned kind of like the Zelda where you kind of... It's about finding your way. The thing with Zelda is it's always like you look for the one item, you use that for the rest of that level... And then you might use it in combat, but that's pretty much you've gotten your use out of it. I liked how in the second area that we played, you got the electricity ability, but then you still had to use the wind ability quite a bit to kind of make that. So I like that. So is that something that you are wanting to continue to make every ability still feel useful even as you continue through the game?
Yeah, I definitely don't think we want to, you know, make area one the wind dungeon, area two the electricity dungeon, you know. Going forward, like, as you said, Zelda, a lot of times.
Yeah, it's absolutely a conscious decision to kind of keep all the powers and stuff relevant the entire game. in and out of combat too. So
yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah, because there were definitely wind still played a heavy factor in the second mm-hmm. area that I was in. So because yeah, you start with the wind ability. It's the first one you learn. You get the second ability. It was really funny how I almost missed the electricity ability. So the entire time I was playing this, like the first time, because I, you know, just trying to interact with everything, help find, you know, bugs and also see cool stuff. Bookshelves are scattered throughout that area. And so I start, you know, running around these bookshelves and I click on the first one I see and it actually pops up a message. So I'm like, okay, cool. I'm just going to click on all of these because I want to see what happens. And nothing really had happened with any of the bookshelves until the point it would have. And not only would it have, there was a flashing beacon on a bookshelf. And I just go to leave the room. And as I'm leaving, Pat's like, oh, did I not make that obvious enough? Go back in there real quick. So, yeah, I almost skipped completely over that electricity ability.
I was shaking my head pretty hard. Jesse, what are you doing?
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I was clicking on, like, even just ones, like, off to the side that there was nothing else over in that area but a bookshelf with nothing on it. I still clicked on it.
Was that a challenge to be able to kind of, because I think at least for the version that I played, and I know it's still relatively early in, and you were still doing, you know, even in the like 2 weeks it was between when you played it and when I played it, how difficult is the balancing? Because there were definitely times like within combat that I was like, okay, well I can tell I'm running low on these items that I need. I'm getting nervous, but it was never at the point where it's like, okay, well now I'm just screwed because I'm super short on all of them. So between like the balancing of the combat and also, you know, balancing how to use the spells to explore the world, is that, I feel like that would have to have been difficult.
We've had a lot of conversations, especially after playtest, because, you know, one person will find something that you think is painfully obvious and then five other people miss it. Mm-hmm. And you're like, all right, how do we, you know, make this obvious so that without just, you know, walking into a room and popping up a dialogue box that says, hey, go click on this. And because you want, you know, the player to feel some accomplishment whenever they find something and not like, oh, they handheld me all the way over here. Mm-hmm. And especially in like battles too, you know, you want to give them depth so that, you know, you can figure stuff out and let them, you know, work through it on their own and figure stuff out. But it's the balance is really tricky, and the actual balance about how much this damage this should do and how much, you know, health this should heal is also really tricky.
Yeah. It is hard to say because there's people like you, Asa, that kind of went out of their way and found a lot of like the hidden stuff. And then still like was scraping by to beat all the enemies. Mm-hmm. So, it's kind of a, you can't make it too easy because then it kind of defeats the purpose of like having the battle system be the way it is. Mm-hmm. So you kind of just have to rely on the player to kind of go looking for stuff, go looking for items. And we try to reward the player for going off the beaten path when there are kind of different areas to explore. So we don't expect you to be able to just beat the game by not thinking and not exploring, but if you kind of don't think and explore, you might have a better chance, or if you think and don't explore, you'll also have a good chance of beating it. Mm-hmm. So, but if you fail at both of those, then you're not going to be able to probably beat the game, but I think that goes for most games that you play. So,
and I did like that you are kind of immediately, because it is through the story, because like you said, you know, your parents are missing, no one is in the town, so you're exploring anyway to progress the story. Mm-hmm. But as you are like, okay, well, you know, here's a little cranny you can maybe look into, there might be something that I need here, and then you are just kind of rewarded with items. So that idea of exploring is established very early on, which I think is a really good decision.
Yeah, I do think it also works out pretty well with the lack of random encounters, and everything is, you know, set up to be a, you know, bigger battle. Is once you get there, if you find that you can't beat it, you can, you know, go back for a few rooms and maybe there's a bunch of items you miss that will help you get through that. So
mm-hmm. That's kind of nice, because there's also not a any sort of like level up system in this either.
Correct.
Yeah, so you don't have, there's nothing of that grind work that you have to do in some of the other you know, traditional turn-based RPGs to try and level up your character so that you can beat the goons and everything else. So, you know, I do like that feature a whole lot. So, yeah, like Ben said, you can backtrack and like, all right, I am completely out of apples and berries. Surely there are some that I have missed. You just kind of scrounge back around. So if you guys want to actually, the item system, go ahead and talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so in our game, there's not a lot of townspeople or anything. Like, most of them are dead or missing. So you kind of take that opportunity to kind of scavenge around in the towns and the dungeons when you can. So finding the items is pretty important. It's not as hardcore as like Resident Evil, where you're like, I have to find everything and I can't shoot my gun until, you know, later in the game. It's not quite as hardcore, but it is still important to kind of explore the different towns and kind of find different items and everything, because there's no shops to buy them in. So you're kind of just left to your devices on what you find and what you're, how good you're playing the battles to kind of conserve those items. But kind of like how we described the battle system earlier, when you're in battle, you do have a timer for your items, and it's kind of the slowest one that fills. But you can kind of charge other attacks to kind of boost that up. And so there's a little bit of strategy on which items you're using and when.
That was one of the things that I really liked about combat, was constantly, like, even if I didn't necessarily think I needed to, like, give my health a boost or like refill my mana, I would go ahead and use something just to kind of keep that timer on refresh.
Yep.
Because I didn't want to, because I think pretty early on I did kind of let to where my health and my mana were both like really low. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, so either I'm not going to be able to attack or I'm just going to die. So I need to be paying more attention to this one. And that's where it kind of clicked, where it's like, oh no, yeah, all three of these are equally important.
Yeah, they're meant to be used. And it's a lot of maintaining where you're currently at in battle with mm-hmm. items. So like, you don't want to just, you know, use it all the way up to, you know, if you're at, you know, 85 health, you don't want to use something that restores you 30. But if you restore something that uses you 10, you know, you've not actually lost anything. You just have a timer to wait. And then if an enemy hits you for a lot, you can then use it again, but you don't have to wait until you're at 2 health before you use anything, or else you're going to be scraping by for a really long time. Mm-hmm.
And I do, like, you guys have used an item system that I'm kind of fond of, where you have obviously different types of, it's fruit mostly, am I?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Because I couldn't think of anything non-fruit, but but yeah, no, you have fruit that restores your magic and apples inside of combat and outside of combat. And I do really like the system of you have more common items, usually have some kind of detractor. And I like that system a lot, where it's like, you know, if you've got plenty of magic but you're running low on health, or you're going to have to use magic up anyway, or, you know, something like that, you can kind of balance that in with, you know, gain this much health, lose this much magic, gain this much magic, lose this much health, that kind of deal.
Yeah, one of the things I wanted to avoid too is, you know, if you play a typical RPG, you get, you know, potions, you get super potions, you get hyper potions, and then you'll never use the previous versions of those ever again. Mm-hmm. So it kind of ties into the fact that we don't have a level up system, to where even the regular apples that you get that only restore 10 HP, like, they're still helpful the entire game. And pretty much all the items, all the spells, all the actions you get are things you're going to be using the entire game. You never get like a, you know, tornado 1, tornado 2. Like, it's just the one for the entire game, and it has you know, uses in battle that you'll have to use even towards the end of the game.
I do like that a whole lot. So you never have to. The combat stays interesting because the magic keeps improving, not because you're suddenly, you get more options, not because your stuff gets stronger or you get stronger.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't keep, you know, spell A long enough to get spell B, and then you ditch spell A.
Yep. Mm. No, I like that a whole lot. Mm. I like options.
Yeah. And it also feels better with, you know, the more you use it, you're like, all right, I kind of figure out what this does. And if an enemy reacts a certain way, they're going to react a certain way, you know, most of the time. Like, you know, if an enemy's weak to something, basically, you know what is spelled. You can get familiar with spells, I guess is what I'm trying to say. It'll do this much damage each time I use it. And then if it doesn't do that much damage, something's up with this enemy. So like it has a strength against wind or something like that.
So if something is constantly hitting for 10, you recognize this always hits for 10. Then if it suddenly hits somebody for 1.
Yeah, something's up.
Some doing something wrong.
Yeah.
Got to do something different. I do like it a whole lot. I like the strengths. I like the weaknesses. It's really, really cool.
Thank you.
Good job.
We like hearing that.
What do you, so for each of you individually, what do you think the biggest challenge of this so far has been?
In terms of the game making process?
Yeah.
Well, for me, it was deciding to make my own engine instead of using something like Unity. That was a whole lot of work that is really unnecessary. And for any aspiring game developers, go download Unity and try that out. It's a really good program. You're still a programmer if you use that, unlike what 6.5 years ago Ben thought. But yeah, it's just, there are so many interactions with so many systems. It's really hard to keep them straight. You fix one thing and another thing might break.
Because I don't know anything about game development, even a little bit, but I do. There was a thing that I kind of broke it jumping on that one platform, and then it just kind of kept going. So it's like, oh, we'll pull up debug mode real quick, and just seeing all of the different like squares and the layers of everything, I was like, oh, this is way more complicated than I was thinking it was gonna be.
Yeah, and that was one room.
Yeah, that was yeah. That was just the one room.
Yeah, no, it's a lot. Yeah, as said before, but if you ever think, man, making a game must be hard work. It is, and it's more than that.
And it's also, because I do have a little bit of a programming background, whenever I hear anyone say, it can't be that difficult to program something, anything.
Oh, just do this thing.
Yeah, like Dalton. Dalton, I wish he was here so I could actually like trash talk him to his face here.
He'll listen.
Yeah, he'll listen to the show. That's fine. We were at Villainous Grounds,
mm-hmm.
and I don't remember what it was now that he was saying. Oh,
It was the
pull list program. Because I was talking about... They have a new system, Diamond, who we all hate if you guys have listened to comic book stuff before. Diamond has this new system where you can create a pull list through Diamond, and they'll actually order that for you and send it to your LCS. And I was wondering like how difficult it would be to make, you know, program a website interface where you could do it yourself and it would just send a list to your actual LCS. They can order it for you and send it back, and you can make edits and everything there. And, I mean, not, like, in the grand scheme of things, a terribly difficult program to do. But Dalton's just like, oh, no, that would be super easy. And I looked at him like...
The conceptualizing that would, yes, that would be super easy.
I just, says the guy that has never even seen code.
And it was kind of like, it was a mood change. Like, Jesse clearly took that very personally, and I was just like, oh, get him.
Yeah, yeah, no, because it's just like, really? You're just going to... All right, so singing an opera is really easy, right? I can just go and do that?
Like, just make your voice loud and, like, good.
Right, yeah, I can just do that, right? That's fine. Anyway, yeah, no, programming. It's super fun and not as easy as some people think.
Ben sometimes makes it look easy, though. Like, I'll be like, hey, can you add this in? He's like, yeah, I think I can do that. And it'll be done, like, in 15 minutes. Like, man, he's a wizard. How do you do this?
Yeah, no, I went to college with the guy. I know. Yeah, he and I entered a programming competition, I remember. And I basically got relegated to, like, looking up fine syntax for him while he just kind of went to town. Because I would just slow him down.
And on the bright side, he got a pretty nice laptop bag from it.
I did. I've used it, like, twice since then.
Oh, God, I still use it all the time.
Yeah, I have a backpack for it. I like it a little bit better. And it's not like Ben always made me look like a bad programmer. But it's not that I am a bad programmer. It's just Ben is that flipping good. Wizard is a good term for it. All right, so yeah, that question that Asa asked, same to you two. What do you?
As far as artwork goes, I think the biggest challenge for me is balancing wanting everything to be perfect with getting the game done in our lifetimes. Because you know, yeah. I'm not. If you've heard about Phil Fish with Fez, I think he redrew all of the artwork at least 2 or 3 times before that game came out. And I just don't have the time or resources to do that. So
it's hard enough to do it once.
Right, yeah. So I really just, I have to be conscientious about it. I can't work on an individual element for days on end. It has to get done at some point. Yep.
That was actually before I came here. I was watching Better Call Saul. Great show, by the way. They added season 3 to Netflix finally. They there was a line in there that's just perfect for what you just said. Perfection is the enemy of perfectly adequate. And I love that line so much.
Yeah, that's really great. Yeah, there's a there's an artist I started following pretty recently. His name is Jake Parker, and his mantra is finished, not perfect. You can try to perfect something, but the reality is you'll probably never be happy with it anyway. So you might as well just get it done and move on to the next thing, because then once you're done with everything, you have a full finished project that you can be happy with and be proud of, rather than fretting over this one little thing that nobody is probably going to notice anyway. Yeah.
Doesn't have to be perfect if the game never comes out.
Right, exactly.
Yep, words to live by.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess for me, it's kind of balancing the workload on these guys. Because this was supposed to start as a very simple project, and it turned out, you know, not to be. I think that happens with a lot of games, though. So yeah, it's, you know, there's kind of ideas and stuff I'd like to flesh out, but at the same time, like, no, we have to just kind of focus on what we're doing now. And also a lot of times it's just like, well, can we reuse like some of these art assets or reuse like some of the abilities that we've already got into, you know, these newer areas that we're going forward, like, you know, designing and everything. So yeah, kind of narrowing the scope is a really big challenge, because, you know, when you're dreaming it, you're always dreaming big, right? So but you have to face the reality that you need to finish at some point. That and it's not really a challenge anymore, but a challenge at the start was I was kind of drawing maps out just on paper to kind of sketch them out and get an idea of what we wanted to do, and they were all too big. Like, every single area had drawn like so much space for, and like we put the first one in the game, and just like walking from point A to point B just took so long. We're like, okay, it's time to redo all these. So luckily, you know, we didn't really spend a lot of time, you know, putting everything into the game first. We just kind of, you know, did that one area and realized from then on.
Yeah, thankfully that was MS Paint artwork and not Brian's hours of artwork. So we lost minutes rather than days.
Yeah, if you think Ben is a wizard at programming, you should watch the man work in MS Paint.
Most of that was pretty spectacular. He's just so fast with it.
I know. Like,
I've just been using computers since like before I can remember, so I'm very comfortable.
I mean, me too, but I'm still not that comfortable with the MS Paint hotkeys.
They change one, it makes them real mad.
I'm the only person I know who got mad about the Windows 7 version of MS Paint. Mad.
I mean, they took out certain features. That was kind of annoying.
So Windows 8. Windows 8, sorry.
Yeah, because the Windows 10 version is a little bit better, but...
is better.
Still doesn't have your same hotkeys.
Control R pulls up a ruler instead of the rotate and resize. What is up with that?
Makes no sense at all.
Or sorry, rotate.
This is the most firm opinion I've ever heard on MS Paint. Yeah. Like in
my sorry,
life.
Rotate. Control W was skew and resize. And you know what? Pre-Windows 8, MS Paint let you put a third color if you held control while clicking on a color. The new ones, they decided to take that out. You can only have two. These are only a couple of my many opinions on the new versions of MS Paint.
Coming soon to the Podzilla 1985 network, Paint Talk with Ben Martin.
I could get one a good episode out of it, at least.
At least. And I do know a lot of like art majors and people that do a lot of specialty in Photoshop, though. And apparently they, from time to time, change hotkeys. And those sections of the internet go absolutely insane.
Well, especially when it's a paid service that people like have to use for their jobs, mm-hmm. for them to just kind of go and be like, oh no, we're changing this now. Because like, yeah, I got annoyed when Snapchat redid their like UI, but like that doesn't, my livelihood does not rely on whose stories I can see in a timely manner.
Right.
Yeah, because I'll see and the other big one that I see frequently are the people that have learned Photoshop and everything else using a Mac. And then have a job where they have to use, because I've got a friend that's going through this now, have a job where they have to then use PC, still Photoshop, and the hotkeys are just different enough that it's annoying. And Pat pointed at Brian. Is this something you've encountered?
I have encountered this, and I've actually transitioned like between jobs. I'll have one job where I'm on a Mac and then another job where I'm on a PC. Oof. And so you get, there is definitely an adjustment period there for sure. It's tricky for a couple of days until you get the hang of it.
Oh, yeah. I know with programming, with my job, like I use so many shortcut keys, and there's different versions of Visual Studio, and like some of my coworkers have the one that has, you know, F5 is not build and debug. It's nothing. And the control shift B is that. And I just have to like take my hands off the keyboard and say, you hit the buttons. I don't know what it is.
And I know a lot of you are thinking out there, like, what's the big deal with hotkeys? Like, okay, whenever you're doing these, like so many of these actions per day, those hotkeys save you in, you know, the span of a week, hours.
Time to raise my APM.
Especially undo. That's like the most important one of all.
It's
like my laptop at work that has the FN key where the control key should be. Like maniacs.
Yeah, that's upsettingly.
Yeah. There's one key that goes in the bottom left corner of the keyboard, and that's control.
It's always control. I've never heard of anybody putting an FN key there.
Lenovo, thank you very much.
Yeah, Lenovo.
Killing that
big
possible sponsor.
We were so close to closing that deal, too.
Oh, dang it. Sorry, Lenovo. Next time, maybe.
More like Leno-no.
He's going to have to get back in with Dell. That's the laptop I'm using. Come on, Dell.
Has control in the right spot.
It does. I actually really like this keyboard in general. It feels super cheap, but, you know, the layout's good.
It also doesn't have the right click key on it. My laptop at work.
Oh, wait, right click key?
Yeah.
That one. Oh, yeah. Well, all right.
All right. So this is just evolving into my opinions about computers.
Computers and hotkeys. All right. Yeah. Let's get, I guess, back to the game here. Because we're almost through this interview, guys. You have almost made it. So we've talked to you, you know, you're about 20 to 50%, which is pretty broad, but when do you guys hope that you have a playable demo for the listeners?
It's a good question. We've never really discussed doing a playable demo.
Yeah.
I suppose it's something we should probably do, because I think our our game starts out a little bit better than most RPGs, because a lot of RPGs you play, especially JRPGs, they start out with like a wall of text and like cutscenes for days, mm-hmm. whereas ours kind of gets you into action pretty quick. So it's all about finding the time, and right now our time is just devoted on pushing forward with the game. So if we find a time to kind of carve out a demo and, you know, just limit people's options to just that demo, it's something we'll kind of talk about. But right now we don't have a concrete plan for a playable demo at the moment, since we're just focusing on putting new stuff into the game.
Do you have any kind of, an ideal release window for the finished product?
For motivational sake, we're saying we want to be done by the end of this year, but I don't think that's going to happen.
A little optimistic.
Tight window.
Yeah, it wasn't so tight whenever we thought about it in January. But
so as Asa mentioned earlier, you know, we all have full-time jobs, so this 6.5 years of time, and it is, but it's all been very, very part-time, like, you know, mm-hmm. 2 to 10 hour things. So hopefully, you know, by the end of 2019, you know, we'll be a lot closer. So in the meantime, we'll be plugging away and putting up videos and screenshots and all that, keeping everybody updated on our progress.
Do you have a specific Facebook link, or do you just search Staff and?
You can just search Staff and Shadow, and it should pop up. I think it is just facebook.com/Staff and Shadow, though.
We will also attach it to this episode. In the comments of the, and so
and, yeah, we'll have it on our Facebook page and on the description of the show. So if you're listening to us on Podbean, it'll be there. If you found us through Facebook, it'll be there. If you'd rather find us through Facebook, I can go ahead and plug that, because it's been a while since I've done so. Facebook.com/Podzilla1985, because I know a lot of people listen to us via Podbean and RSS feeds. So mm-hmm. Yeah, you can find us on there, and you'll definitely find the link there, and it'll be a direct link, obviously, at that point to their page. You can give them a like and keep checking out all of their stuff, get all of their updates.
Yes, we feed off of your likes, so please, please.
It sustains
satisfy
them.
Our hunger.
Okay, I think that's all I've got. Asa, do you have any last questions here?
The only two that I have is that the best way to keep to follow up? Like, you don't have, is there like, there's not like a website or Twitter or anything? It's just that Facebook page?
No website quite yet, but yeah, Facebook and also Twitter. And if you follow us on one and not the other, you're getting the same content. Like, it's pretty much just a mirror of each other.
Okay.
Twitter is just Twitter. You can search Staff and Shadow there.
Okay. We'll throw that. We'll find that, too, yep, to be able to throw up there.
If your preferred social media is Twitter.
Mm-hmm. The only other question that I have is, and it's something we kind of briefly talked about when I played the game, is you guys decided not to do any sort of crowdfunding. I just was curious what your reasoning for that is, or if it, you know, just did you want to just keep it between the people working on it, or?
I don't know. For me, it was just, this is our first time making a game, and it's like, can we actually do this? I think at this point we've determined that we can, but it's just, I don't know.
Yeah, it would feel really disingenuous to take people's money not knowing if we were going to be able to finish it or that it was going to turn out any good. So.
Or when we were going to be able to finish it, too.
Gotcha.
You hear that, other game developers that are constantly doing this? If you don't know that you can make a product.
Now, what's your microtransaction model?
Well, let me tell you all about these microtransactions. Yeah. There's all over none.
All over the place, all the time. You want more apples for a battle? $10.99.
No.
No, I'm kidding. No microtransactions.
Good, good. That's the way it really should be. So what platform are you guys planning for release here?
Steam, yeah, PC. We'll probably, you know, we'll definitely put it on Steam, especially now that they've done those changes. Their green light's not there anymore. But yeah, I'll also try to put it on good old games if they'll let us. And if anything else crops up by the time we put it out, yeah, you know, it's fair game. But yeah, PC for sure. We've talked about trying to port it to consoles if we can find an easy means to do that. But that's in the distance. We're just focusing on getting the game done first.
Right, right. Okay, guys. I mean, that's all we got then. Is there anything else you'd like to close with?
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us on the show. We'd love to come back when it's done.
And we will definitely have you guys back when it's done.
Yes.
So we can promote it extra hard.
Sweet.
Yeah, and in the meantime, just you know, give us that like on Facebook if you want to keep track of what's going on with the game.
All right, sounds good. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and thanks, guys, for coming, being on the show. And we definitely look forward to more progress updates. Again, you can find all of their stuff. We'll have the links on our Podbean. We'll have it on Facebook. If you want to look for it yourself, Staff and Shadow, you can find them on Twitter. You can find them on Facebook. You can see all the updates there. And we will also be updating you on our various shows as we get updates, because I want them to succeed because they're my friends and I love them.
Yes.
Oh, thanks.
All right. Thank you for tuning in, everyone, and have a good night.